No roadblocks today. However, on Thursday, there is a roadblock at 6:20 a.m. on Highway 70, 575-678-1178 for the latest info. Tonight's forecast is calling for mostly clear skies. In Alamogordo, expect a low of 41, Cloudcroft a low of 34. For tomorrow, Thursday, looking at sunny skies, mostly clear tomorrow night. In Alamogordo tomorrow, high of 68, low of 41. For Cloudcroft tomorrow, high of 55 and a low of 34.
Happy holidays from your friends at the Winner's Circle.
The Outfitters of Champions in Alamogordo since 1970.
We're thankful and grateful for the many years of support.
We wish you and yours a very Merry Christmas
and a Happy New Year. The Winner's Circle,
1201 10th Street,
in the heart of Alamogordo.
437-9373.
OFCU's holiday skip-a-payment is here. Need a little extra cash? Take a break from your loan payment this November or December with a discounted skip fee. The skip-a-payment program lets you skip your next loan payment, then resume your next regular payment. Submit your skip online at oterofcu.org. Some restrictions may apply. Federally insured by NCUA. This is the Roundup on Alamo Sports and Talk, 1230 AM and 101.9 FM. Going from the Tularosa Basin and beyond, this is your local connection to the world of sports. From high school to college and to the pros, we cover the latest news and the biggest stories. And don't forget, this is your show. Change the topic anytime. Call us at 437-1230. The Roundup starts right now.
Welcome into the show. Everybody's having a fantastic Wednesday. As we had a few college. Oh, we did some college games yesterday. We did a few high school hoops games yesterday. We got one today. And then Thursday, we'll have, two, I think? Friday, a little bit busier. I think we'll end up with almost everybody's in action on Friday. And Saturday's got a few games as well, so we got a few things happening this week for you. Hey, if you want to call into the show, you heard in the intro, 437-1230. Always happy to hear from you guys. Give us a call. Of course, I was at Alamogordo boys basketball last night. Interesting game. You know, it was – well, I can tell you, both coaches were – it felt like from the get were unhappy with the – calls and non-calls. It was just one of those nights. And, you know, Tiger shot a ton of free throws. Each team got a technical. The Alamo bench got one, and a player for Roswell got one. And I'd been talking about, just weird, you know, I'd talked about the fact that Alamo boys basketball, or I couldn't remember the last time a player had scored 30 points in a game for the boys for Alamo for a while. And Jaden Hernandez goes and scores 32 last night. I'm sure it's probably happened, but it's not a normal enough occurrence that I could sit there and go, oh, yeah, him. It, you know, not something that happens a bunch. And the funny thing about Jaden last night, I mean, it was very accumulative. It wasn't one of those where as you watch the game, it was as if he was out there just absolutely dominating. I mean, he played very well, but it was just kind of in the flow of the game, and there were multiple guys for the Tigers that, you know, Julian Favela had a really good third quarter for the Tigers, right as Roswell was, I think, trying to make a run. And, you know, Will Bynum had some big plays for the Tigers, and Aaron Herrera, you know, he didn't have as good of an offensive night, but his was, you know, he just was – you know, in the trenches, fighting it out for a lot of things. You know, for a guy that's, he's probably 6 foot guard. You know, he's regular in there fighting for rebounds and working in the post to try and score. And you know, he's not the biggest guy, but you regularly see him in there amongst the underneath the basket. You know, trying to get shots from in there. It's he's got an interesting game, that's for sure. So, and a number of the different players had had good games for the Tigers last night. But it was, just, like I said, just one of those where, you know, you got to the end and you're like, oh, yeah, Jaden ended with 32 points, you know. And, I mean, certainly he had right at the end, he was scoring the most, you know, whether it was free throws because he was intentionally fouled or, you know, he was making drives to the basket and getting fouled. And, you know, Tiger shot a lot more free throws than Roswell did last night, that's for sure. But what I will say is Roswell wasn't attacking the bucket, I think, quite as much as Alamo was. It was a lot of drive and kick. And, I mean, I feel like they took more threes than the Tigers did last night. So, and that might just be perception from me. But, yeah, interesting game. You know, Tigers, I think what's impressive for Alamo is, I mean, the fact that they were in a close game and were able to get up there to 82 points. That's not something I feel like the Tigers have really been able to do much in recent years, is when they've got to get into a high-scoring game that they can kind of go shot for shot with teams. And, you know, that's sort of what ended up happening last night. That's certainly, that was a little bit more of what Roswell's game has been over the years, and the way that they, you know, they run and gun. And, you know, defensively, I think both coaches were probably not ecstatic with the product. there were some, you know, open shots, guy, you know, blow-bys, guys going right to the basket and finishing, and, you know, things like that, that as a coach, it'll, I'm sure, drive you crazy. So, yeah, one of those, I would imagine both coaches are, you know, focused on some things coming out of that game. And, yeah, I will say, as upset as the coaches seem to be about the officiating throughout the game, I mean, there were a few calls that I was like, not the best. But they're not anything that was, like, super egregious for my – I mean, a lot of judgment call things. And, I mean, most, that's why most fouls are. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those that it just sort of depends on the official that you get. And sometimes things are called, sometimes things are not. And I've seen it both ways, and I've, you know – but I didn't walk out of that feeling like, man, there were some big calls that affected things here or there. It was, yeah. So, don't know. I'm certainly not the one to be, you know, critical of officiating, simply just because I know how difficult that is. And in basketball, there's a lot of judgment calls that I'm not sure I know the exact, I don't want to say rule, but at least exactly what the officials are looking for in some spots here and there. So it's a little bit easier in some other sports. But, you know. But like I said, that would have been one of those, I think, if the roles had been flipped, and Roswell had shot that many more free throws than Alamo, I mean, you could have understood the irritation from the Roswell side or from the Alamo side, vice versa. And like I said, neither coaches, I mean, both coaches were kind of on it most of the night with the officials. So that, maybe that's a normal thing. I don't know. Usually I sit courtside for a lot of games, and I mean, there'll be a few calls here or there, but I think most of our coaches are usually on their team more than they're on the officials, from my perspective. But well, we'll see what happens Friday, Saturday. Alamo gets Espanola Valley and Cathedral. I think Cathedral's the tougher test. Espanola's gotten off to a tough start this year, but maybe they'll be bouncing back. I don't know, but I think when I checked it yesterday, it was 1-6 for them this season. So Cathedral's played a little bit better, so I think those will end up being, I think Saturday certainly, but I think, you know, I still think Friday could end up being an interesting one. So, and just a reminder, by the way, you can also, Espanola's playing Mayfield on Saturday before Alamo plays their C-team JV varsity set up with Cathedral. So you can actually catch a couple of varsity games on Saturday at the Tiger Pit. They're pretty spread apart, but you can. And let's see. Tularosa boys basketball got the win over Mescalero Apache last night. As I think that was 71-39. I'm going to have to pull it up here. Make sure I don't get the incorrect score there. 71-39. Jacoby Apachito with 21. Luciano Gonzalez and River Casero each had 13. For the Chiefs, it was Anthony Yuzos who had 14. Shywin Chaffins, 8. Avon Yellowcloud with 6. So the Wildcats stay unbeaten at 7-0. Maybe their toughest test of the season on Thursday. I don't know. Bosque is good. Dexter's good. St. Mike's is obviously very good. So that'll be a good game on Thursday out in Tularosa. And the Chiefs are 4-5. They'll play at Roy Mosquero on Friday at the Fort Sumner tournament. They'll also play Springer on Saturday. At least that's what's listed as their games. That's definitely been one of those that stuff has changed up at the last minute in that tournament in recent years. So I will play that by ear, obviously. But we'll see how it goes for the Chiefs and the Lady Chiefs coming up this weekend. Meanwhile, tonight it's Tularosa versus Mescalero in girls basketball. And then we also had Alamogordo girls basketball, who struggled at Hobbs. 68-18 was the final. And got 5 from Kalila Ramirez, 4 from Maddie Flores. So Lady Tigers are 2-4. They'll play Miyamura on Thursday at the Clovis tournament. That's certainly one that they should have a good chance at grabbing a victory in coming up on Friday, or Thursday, I should say. And then we'll see how they do Friday and Saturday. But that tournament's been a little hit or miss for them over the years. So we'll see. And as we look throughout the rest of the week, we already told you what Alamogordo boys have coming up. Thule boys, Thule girls have the game tonight. And then also on Friday, they'll host West Las Vegas. The Lady Chiefs from Mescalero, they'll be out at the Fort Sumner tournament. And as far as I can tell, the game's the same. Roy Mosquero, Springer is who they'll be facing Friday, Saturday, same as the boys. And there's also Cloudcroft girls basketball at the Capitan tournament. They play Rodoso on Thursday for their first game of that tournament. And let's see. Are we missing anybody else? Cloudcroft boys are off this week and next week and the week after, as a matter of fact. And then we got Alamogordo Wrestling on Friday and Saturday, heading over to the Rio Hondo invite. So that's coming up on their schedule. And there's also an athlete signing today. Alyssa Bautista is signing her letter of intent, which, yeah, I'm going to have to pull this up because I'm going to get the college wrong. I want to say it's Luna, but let me make sure. Yeah, Luna Community College is where she's going to play softball. So we will have some pictures up. She's doing that today at 5:30 in the AHS Commons area. And I was told, if you are interested in attending, that you can come in off Tiger Drive. I'm not going to guarantee that for you. It's sometimes if they have one of those signings on campus, it can be a little bit of a challenge to get where you're going. So I will say at least it's after school hours, so makes it a little bit easier. But anyway, let's see. Anything else we want to get to on the local side of things? I think it's going to be a really good game tonight in Tularosa, by the way, between the Lady Chiefs and the Lady Cats. I think that should be interesting. I know that Mescalero's gotten off to a little bit of a tougher start than I think they were hoping to this year. And I think Thule girls have played pretty solid to begin their season. But those have been some good games in recent years between Tularosa and Mescalero Apache, going back to when they were district opponents and since when they've faced off. They've usually been decent matchups. So we'll see what we get on that one tonight. And let's see. Anything else we want to hit on before we move on from the local stuff? I don't think I've got a whole lot else for you guys on that front. So So again, final scores from last night. The Alamogordo boys win 82-71 as they faced off against Roswell last night. Tule boys beat Mescalero 71-39, and the over Mescalero, the Alamo girls lost at Hobbs last night 68-18. So those are your finals from yesterday. Okay. Well, I guess we'll flip over. I do wonder, do we have... I'm kind of curious when Max Preps restarts their rankings, how often they change those up. Let's see here. Looks like last updated 12-14. So Sunday? Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure how often they're going to do that, but yeah, there's no new rankings that are up at the moment. So, and we went through the coaches' polls rankings that came out yesterday. So there we go. All right. Yeah, let's move on to the Nash side. Probably the big news is Tua Tagovailoa officially being benched for Quinn Ewers for the Dolphins. Like I said, it's an interesting decision because Tua's still got a lot left on his contract. Ewers will pick up his first start Sunday against the Bengals. He served as a team backup quarterback for its Week 7 loss to the Browns and briefly entered the game, but has otherwise been the Dolphins' emergency quarterback. And McDaniel says, Quinn gives us the best chance to win. Zach Wilson, who is with the Jets, will be the backup Sunday, while Tagovailoa will be the emergency third quarterback. Ewers was only promised the start for the Bengals game, according to ESPN's Jeremy Fowler, although the expectation is that he'll start more than one game. The Dolphins also released veteran pass rusher Matthew Judon on Wednesday. After signing with Miami in August, Judon played primarily on special teams and as a rotational pass rusher in 13 games. After the Dolphins traded linebacker Jalen Phillips at the deadline, Judon saw increased snaps, but he didn't record a sack this season, and the four-time Pro Bowler will have the chance to sign with a playoff contender if he goes unclaimed on waivers. Tagovailoa threw his NFL-worst 15th interception in a 28-15 loss to the Steelers. He threw two touchdown passes Monday night, but both with the game already in hand for Pittsburgh. And, yeah, they already talked about it. Tagovailoa signed a four-year, $212 million extension in 24 after he led the NFL in passing in 2023. However, he missed a career-high six games last season. And while he has been durable in 2025, his 15 interceptions in 14 games are a career-high. Tagovailoa is already guaranteed $54 million in 2026. And on March 15th of next year, $3 million of his 2027 salary will become guaranteed. If the Dolphins were to release him next year, the move would result in a $99 million dead cap charge. Designating the move as a post-June 1st release would lower that to $67 million in 2026, $31 million in 2027. Whew. I will say, we have seen these big money contracts, especially for quarterbacks, been sort of a mixed bag so far. You know, Tua got that big extension. Feels like, obviously, it hasn't paid off for Miami. You know, probably the big one is Deshaun Watson, which has been an unmitigated disaster in Cleveland, which is not – that has not been totally on the Browns or on Watson. There's been injuries that have been a part of that, but there's obviously been – off the field issues, and then when he was on the field, he really didn't play that well. And I would say good for him that he got the money, I guess, at the end of the day. Who else has gotten one of those big extensions and it really has been kind of meh for them? I guess those are the two big ones that seem to stand out. Cleveland and Miami. There were some people that were talking that way about Trevor Lawrence going into this season that felt like that was a bust, which I thought was maybe a little bit too much. And I don't know. I'm not sitting here saying Lawrence is, you know, shut up all of that at this point, but I would also say that I think it's still a to be determined. I do feel like there were some people that were starting to say that about Brock Purdy a little bit. And I don't know if Purdy's had a spectacular season in San Francisco, but, man, they've managed to fight through, again, some of the injury issues they've had and work through any, you know, off-the-field things. And so, I don't know. Did Geno get a big extension when he was in Seattle? I don't remember if he did or not. I mean, obviously he got a contract, but I don't think that ever ended up being a terrible thing for Seattle. He was okay while he was there, so. Dak. Dak's the one I'm thinking of. That was the one. And, yeah, I mean, Dak's not – I mean, he hasn't been terrible this year, but he certainly hasn't been enough to carry the Cowboys in games that they probably needed. I can't sit here and say that he's been the reason why they're kind of average this year. I think that defense has been not great, but I think that's that. I think that was the obvious one that I was trying to find that has not quite worked out. I don't know if there's anybody else that I would say that about that has gotten that big money contract extension. I would get, you know, Kyler Murray. You could probably say that about. You know, I'm not sure what his extension number was, but obviously that feels like that's not going to be a success story at the end of the day in Arizona. So, but yeah, when you're benching a seemingly healthy quarterback, even in a season that is done essentially for the Dolphins, that's not a good sign in terms of the future, I think, so. Patrick Mahomes beginning his rehab. He's eyeing a week one return. Wish him the best. Puka Nacua, refs the worst. Make calls to get on TV. Oh, my. That's going to get the main office and going there. He said on the live stream Tuesday that he thinks some NFL referees make calls just to get shown on TV during games. Made the comments on a live stream with Aiden Ross and Neon, two internet streamers. The refs are the worst. Some of the rules aren't these guys want to be. These guys are lawyers. They want to be on TV too. You don't think he's texting his friends in the group chat like, yo, you guys see me on Sunday Night Football? That wasn't PI, but I called it. Oh, man. When asked whether refs are really doing things like that, e.g. calling pass interference when there wasn't any, Nacua said, I mean, these guys are normal human beings too, bro. NFL players can be subject to fines for publicly criticizing officials, and kind of goes through some of the list in here. Yeah, he's getting a fine. Guarantee. Let's put it this way. I hope that's not the case. You know, for an official to be like, yeah, I got to make a call here at some point. I mean, they got to see me making a call. I really, really, really hope that's not the case for any officials at the professional level. You know? That would be concerning for sure. And I mean, I didn't hear the context of Nacua talking, so maybe he was joking. I don't think so, but yeah, that's one of those where the team goes, yeah, you're not going on the podcast anymore, man. you're done with those. One thing I would like to see happen, just so we can find out if it really is part of the issues that are happening in the NFL, is for the NFL to finally have full-time referees and officials. Because I hear that so often, and I just in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, you know, people complain about the officiating in every other sport, and I think the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball, those guys are all full-time. And we, you know, players and coaches and fans still complain about those too. So I guess I just have a hard time seeing as that being the big difference in that, oh, that's not their full-time job. I can sort of understand. And, you know, I guess I would say for the NFL, gosh, they can afford – I know these guys wouldn't be, you know, working at certain times throughout the year, but and I want to be clear. I think it's the officials' union that I don't think they want this to become a full-time job. I don't think this is something the NFL is saying, no, we don't want to do this. So it's a weird dynamic. For whatever reason, you know, NFL officials have always been, you know, guys that, you know, have full-time jobs in other venues. And, you know, that's what it is for, you know, high school officials and I think a lot decent amount of college officials because it's not necessarily a full-time, you know, gig. It's something you do on the side. But I will say for guys that are working at the professional level, it's kind of a strange deal because you know the NFL could afford to pay these guys for a full year salary. I don't think that that's something that – and gals for that matter. I don't think that's something that would be difficult for them. It wouldn't be like a huge extra expense. And considering how much money the NFL makes on a given year. But I guess – I'm skeptical in believing that that's going to be the, you know, a cure-all or even anything that will make something that will make the officiating better overall. It's, yeah, it's tough. And again, not easy to do their job. Pretty clear. It's not easy, but yeah. I mean, it won't. Listen. I mean, even if we had some type of automated way to do some of these things, people would still be upset. You know, something's not calibrated right. You know, they're not yada yada. If we had, you know, robot officials in some way, shape, or form, That's the next. That's what we're gonna use AI for. We're gonna be able to have officiating for games. I mean that's the funny thing about stuff like that is, you know, we complain about the human aspect of it, but I guarantee if we did something that was very rigid and not didn't have the human element to it, people would still be upset about it in some ways. So I mean, you see it in tennis. There's still some things that go on there that, you know, even though they've got systems that, you know, essentially take it out of humans' hands, you know, line calls and things like that, there's still plenty of disagreements in those in that venue too. So I don't know. All right, let's go ahead and take a break. We'll come back if you want to call into the show, 437-1230. More of the Roundup coming up for you right after this.
This is Deborah Romero, President and CEO of First National Bank. As we gather with family and friends this holiday season, I want to thank you for the trust that you have placed in us. Serving our community is a privilege, and we look forward to continuing that commitment in the year ahead. From all of us at First National Bank, we wish you a joyous Christmas and a prosperous New Year.
Putting you first is in our name. First National Bank.
Member FDIC.
Looking to transform your home's exterior? Meet Rudy Ochoa. With years of experience in stucco, Rudy and his crew deliver quality craftsmanship and stunning flawless finishes. 575-442-6745.
Ryan Richardson Motor Company wishes the Tigers an amazing winning season. May your efforts match your dreams. Buy, sell, or trade late model cars, trucks, and SUVs. Financing available. Stop by for a test drive and score an amazing deal with Ryan Richardson Motor Company. 318 South White Sands Boulevard or online at ryanrichardson.company. That's ryanrichardson.company.
Man, I loved playing high school sports growing up. And it's fun being a fan now, don't get me wrong, but sitting in the stands feels like I'm missing out on all the action, you know? I wanted to get back in the game, so I signed up to be a high school official. It takes me back to my playing days. I'm supporting students, and I get paid to make the big calls. Do you want to see the game up close? Sign up to become an official in New Mexico at highschoolofficials.com.
What is dedication?
My daughter started making necklaces. She makes what we call affirmation fashion. I tell her every day that your black is beautiful. Your black is beautiful. And if there's anything better than being beautiful, it's being smart. If there's anything better than being smart, it's being kind. And reaffirming that every day is our method of making sure her chin never drops. My dad wasn't around, and I remember riding a bike and falling off and cutting myself, and me never just wanting to get back on it. People ask, how your children learn how to ride a bike, and you didn't. I didn't teach them. I just created an environment where they taught themselves, and all I had to do was be there.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Michael Shinneberry here. Join me for live and local discussions every Tuesday and Thursday mornings from 7 to 8 a.m. on Alamo Sports and Talk, 1230 a.m. and 101.9 FM. If it's local events, we talk about it. If it's politics, local, state, or national, we talk about it. Pick a subject, we talk about it. We're now streaming online at alamosportsandtalk.com. It's the Michael Shinneberry Show every Tuesday and Thursday morning from 7 to 8 a.m. only on Alamo Sports and Talk, 1230 a.m. and 101.9 FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Alamo Sports and Talk, 1230, 1019, 437, 1230. If you'd like to chat on the show today, as always, anything you'd like to talk about, we can get into. What is this? Fenway Sports Group has agreed in principle to the sale of the Pittsburgh Penguins to the Chicago-based Hoffman family. The deal is pending approval by the NHL's Board of Governors. While the exact sale price was not immediately confirmed, league sources expect the deal to land between $1.7 and $1.8 billion for the Penguins. And Fenway Sports Group bought the controlling interest of the Penguins in 2021 for $900 million. Frank Cervalli, the hockey journalist, was the first to report this. Penguins were previously owned by Ron Burkle and Mario Lemieux, who had bought the team and saved it from bankruptcy in 1999. That group helped keep the Penguins in Pittsburgh. Then the club went on to win three Stanley Cups in 09, 16, and 17. And Lemieux remained involved with the team after the sale of Fenway, and his role with the new partnership group remains to be seen. FSG's portfolio has a ton of things like Liverpool, the Red Sox, Fenway Park, Nesson, RFK Racing of NASCAR, the Boston Common Golf of TGL. And in January, ESPN reported that Fenway was taking the Penguins to market to explore selling a minority stake, which I guess now has increased to that. The Hoffman family of companies is a multi-generational family-owned private equity firm whose CEO is billionaire David Hoffman. Their broad portfolio includes more than 100 brands in real estate, manufacturing, media, and agriculture, among others. They also own the ECHL's Florida Everblades. And I don't think there's anything in here that says they would move the Penguins. That would be really surprising, considering. According to Sportico's report in October, the average NHL franchise is now worth an estimated $2.1 billion. That's a 17% increase in 1 year and more than 100% since 2022. So, I don't know. It's one of those. I mean, I'm a Penguins fan. But the tough thing for me, obviously, is I don't really have tight connections to the communities of the teams that I follow. You know? I grew up in a place that didn't have a lot of professional sports franchises, so it's a little bit of a different situation for me when I sit there, oh, are they going to move? Because I know Buffalo for a little while, Pittsburgh was obviously, there was discussion about that. I don't think the Braves have really been in the market to move, or Indiana, or the Pacers for that matter. So, but I guess I would be surprised at this point if that new group would end up moving the Penguins somewhere, but who knows? I guess I would say if you're thinking about moving a team, you know, the NHL is looking to expand, so why not get in on an expansion and put it where you want to put it, somewhere around the country, but don't know. Let's see. Any other interesting headlines today? Knicks won the NBA Cup last night and then said they will not hang an NBA Cup banner at Madison Square Garden. I guess the Bucks and the Lakers both did that, which I find weird. That's something that is always, you know, a little joke discussion on the internet and a lot of other places, is what people decide to raise banners for in their home arenas, at least at the professional level and at the college side of things. I don't see, like, when I go around to high school gyms, I don't see anything weird in terms of banners that are up. I see districts, you know, district championships and state championship banners, but that's kind of about it, you know? Like, I know Carlsbad's got their Gatorade Player of the Year winner banners up in their gym, which I think is a good one. So, yeah, at the high school level, I never see anything where I go, that's an interesting banner to raise. I think in the gym for Alamo, there's kind of limited space. You don't have a lot of the actual banners up in places. They just have the different sports and all the district championships or state championships, which I know there's some sports that have not kept up with that in recent years. So some that need to add some in. Let's go to the phones during the roundup.
Hey, Spark, how's it going?
What's up, man?
I used to rip Western Michigan for some of the banner selections because they would put banners up for, like, division championships and basketball for the MAC. Like, West Division champions, when it didn't get you anything except, like, a 2 seed in the tournament.
Yeah, that's – I mean, I feel like that's hit or miss. I mean, that's one that I can sort of see both sides of. Yeah, divisional championship in a conference is kind of you know, that's –
Right, I don't even know if anybody has division for basketball anymore. I think people got rid of it for football too. But yeah, for football they never put those up, division championships. But I always just looked up to those. I was like, why do we have MAC West champions? And it should be of note that for men's basketball, the MAC West was really bad. Like, everybody was under 500, and the winner of the MAC West just got the 2 seed for the conference tournament and will lose to in the first round of the tournament.
So,
or I guess they got a bye, but whatever. So I wasn't a huge fan of that, but like I'm okay with, like, obviously conference championships and NCAA tournaments or bowl games or stuff like that. But yeah, division championships and conferences, not a fan of that.
So. No. Yeah. That's one of those. I was trying to remember New Mexico State if they had NIT appearances on at a banner up there. I feel like they did.
I think they do. I'm okay with NIT appearances. Okay.
All right.
Because, yeah, a lot of people put their NIT. Western Michigan has NIT as well. Same with WNIT. The ones that I would – unless you won it, I would not want, like, CIT or CBI banners up, like, that you went to the CBI or the CIT. So if you want it, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Where does NBA Cup fit for you?
I don't even care,
oh, okay,
to be honest. It's like, to be quite honest, I didn't even know that they were playing last night.
What I would say is, if you walked into the United Center and the Bulls had won an NBA Cup and there was an NBA Cup winner banner up there, would you sort of be like, eh? Or would you be like...
I mean, I would be okay with it if it was not displayed next to the championship banners.
Okay. Yeah.
I can't remember. I want to say, like, because I know they have, like, and the Blackhawks do too, they have the division championships up, which I'm okay with that for the NBA and the NHL. So, and I think, like, for the Blackhawks, they have conference championships. I don't think the Bulls have never lost in the finals. So I don't think they have separate banners for that.
Yeah, that's a good call. They've never gotten Didn't they get to a conference? No, they got to a conference final with Rose's team, right, and lost?
Right, but what I'm saying is they've never lost in the NBA finals. So.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I think they just have division championships. Obviously, they're NBA championships. They're for the Blackhawks, and Stanley Cup championship, division championship. And I think, like, the year that they played the Penguins, they lost in the finals. But I think they have a Western Conference championship banner up as well, which I'm okay with those. But some NFL teams, like, I think it's the Patriots, don't put up division championships. And so, like, I think it was on the Pat McAfee show, Bob Connor was saying, we don't do that. We just put Super Bowl championships up.
Well, I mean, so, I will say, they obviously won a lot of AFC East titles during Brady's run, but I wonder if that's actually true or not. I'm betting they probably put up their division championships up there.
Right. I'm trying to think, like, what the Cubs have. I do have an issue. Sometimes teams are putting wild cards up as, like, wild card winners, which I think in the 90s that was okay because there was only one. There was always a criticism, too, that the Mets used to do that, and then you would never find that at Yankee Stadium, that they would put a wild card banner up. I'm trying to think if the Cubs even have any of their wild card or not. I think they just have flags every year they've made the playoffs. So I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I think that's what the Braves have. I think they've got something up there for every time they've made the postseason. And there, I mean, there's a team that won a ton of NL East titles there for years, or NL West, depending on which
year.
So
I think what they do is like, for the Cubs, they have the World Series flags are in center field, and then on top of the ballpark where the lights are, I think they have different color flags for if it's a division, NL pennant, or a wild card. But I could be wrong. It's been a while.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Unfortunately, I think there's some, and I think the one that we used to pick on the most is Grand Canyon, just because they so badly want to raise some sort of banner. And it's like, wait until you win a conference championship. Wait until you, you know, do something that really is, you know, exciting. And, you know, don't raise a banner, you know, prior to that without really it merely meaning anything, you know.
Are you okay with conference? I'm okay with this. Conference regular season championships? Like, if you're a mid-major, because, you know, and if you lose in the tournament, you're still the regular season champion. Like, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's... Yeah. I think I'm fine with that. Just because, I mean, weird things obviously happen in conference tournaments, so I think I can get behind that one.
Football.
Yeah.
Now for football, I mean, there technically isn't a regular season champion. I don't think anybody claims that. I think you're just the champion if you win the championship game.
Yes. Yeah. I think you're right on that, which, like I said, my wish and my hope is that the conferences decide we don't need our conference championship games anymore. And, you know,
Who does that and it works perfectly fine, but we apparently can't do it at the FBS. But the FBS does that.
I know.
There's no conference championships.
Among many things that FCS and D2 and D3 managed to do, and it's just fine that for whatever reason at FBS, our kids couldn't, you know, they can't miss that much class, or, you know, the season's too long, or, you know, yada yada yada. And I'm just like, all right, you know, I guess you're okay.
Yeah, it doesn't work yet, and we're still playing. You know, we're still playing college football games on January 19th or whatever it is. So,
yeah. The whole thing is – and like I said, I think if they could finish the season around January 1st, it would make the whole college football calendar a whole lot easier. You could have January be basically your transfer portal month, and that way you wouldn't have a bunch of people that are leaving school early and stuff, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Even though I don't agree with something recently he said, Joe Klatt has always said that the national championship should be January 1st, and it should be the Rose Bowl, and then you can open your I think it opens on January 2nd anyways, and you can open the transfer portal the next day. So I'm cool with that, but apparently we can't do that. We can't do that.
Well, there's, like I said, it's money. There's a lot of money that's tied up in those conference championship games, and I guess there's a lot of money tied up in these bowl games. I have a hard time believing that, you know, the First Responder Bowl has, you know, a ton of money tied up in it. Because that was the one that was last night, right?
No, it was the Salute to Veterans Bowl. Oh, but, okay. I mean, I made a comment to you that that was Western Michigan was in that bowl game last year. I don't think it was very well attended. Although they did have South Alabama in it. But last night you had two Alabama schools in there in Troy and Jacksonville State. I think it was the first time they played each other since the 70s or something like that. Yeah. So it had a pretty decent crowd for a Tuesday night.
I guess I would like to see a study of like how much community support and, you know, attendance and on a regular basis at, you know, bowl games around the country and decide which ones to keep, you know, and
yeah, I think you and I have talked about this. Like, there's like the LA Bowl obviously was a huge disaster on Saturday night, but that one's going away. Yeah, that bowl game, I think, had lost attendance every year. But they've already said that one's going away. So, you know, it's some of these early ones, the ones that are played at like, I hate to say this because my school's in one of them, but the Myrtle Beach Bowl is like going to be a 11 a.m. Eastern kickoff on a Friday.
Yeah.
Anybody really watching that? I mean, so.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know that there are, you know, some of these guys are excited to play in bowl games and on, and I get that. Here's the way I would look at it is, you know, of the teams that don't make a, you know, 16 or 24 team playoff, you know, have it basically be, you know, similar to, you know, the NIT and the other tournaments. They don't have to be a postseason, but just they can have the bowl games, but they're just not going to have, you know, a lot of big name schools that are in, you know, some of those bowl games, I guess. So,
yeah. Exactly, and I think the Bahamas Bowl is no more now. I think it became the Xbox Bowl. So, which, hey, I mean, it's Missouri State. Is it Arkansas State, I think, is in it? All those players got Xboxes, so I'm not sure that they would say that they didn't want to be in that bowl game.
Fair enough. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just the grumpy guy. It's like, oh, these bowl games are but
I will say, though, the two bowl games out there, the Sun Bowl and the New Mexico Bowl, are very well supported.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I mean, I think that there are some positives to keep bowls like that. I just think some of the ones in the bigger cities, people were sort of like, you know, nobody really cares.
Well, there's some of them that have two. What's one of them?
The Phoenix area's got a couple. It's at different
stadiums.
Yeah,
but I feel like those are always pretty well attended. Obviously, you have the Fiesta Bowl, but then you have the one that UNM's in, the Rate Bowl, which I think it's pretty well attended, it seems like, every year.
I don't know how well Vegas is attended. The Alamo Bowl, I think, is kind of a hit or miss. I think that ends up being okay. But, yeah, I mean, it's...
I think it also depends who's in it as well.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that has a big part of it, and I don't know. It's just... Unfortunately, these games, I mean, these teams are so different than what they were in the regular season by the time we get to them because, you know, understandably so, guys are in transfer portal and or declaring for the NFL or, you know, on and on and on, so.
Right, exactly. So, I don't know. I mean, yeah, we have this discussion every year if there's too many bowls, and now, of course, you know, with the college football playoffs, there are too many bowl games. So, I mean, we're going to, like, what, 5-7 teams? Like, is it App State doesn't even have a winning record?
Yeah.
And, yep, seven other teams declined the Birmingham Bowl, and they're just playing another Sun Belt team.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's just one of those where it feels like maybe it's time to move on from those things, but, you know, again, where money's tied up and stuff, I do wonder if, you know, some of these bowls, I mean, you know, some of them that have history I get, but some of the ones that have been created within the last 25 years, I feel like, you know, are we needing to keep that stuff? But
right, like, I think it was at New Orleans has two. So, like, I don't know how well the New Orleans Bowls attended. I do know that back, like, what, 20 years ago, the Sun Belt champion used to go there when NMSC was in the Sun Belt. You know, I think Orlando's got, like, five, it seems like. But they actually have three. And then I think Tampa's got two as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I mean, it's all pie in the sky sort of things. I just, you know, there's a lot that feels like needs to change in college football. Just, you know, someone needing to come in and really, make some decisions and whittle things down and make everything a bit more streamlined since we're, you know, moving to a playoff now. And we went through this glut of bowl increases in the 90s and the 2000s, and it would seem smart to kind of back off of that. But
yeah, back in the day, like, for example, I think, like, Western Michigan, the MAC only had one tie-in. Like, they lost to Marshall in the MAC championship 2 years in a row, and they didn't go to a bowl game.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm of the thought that, I mean, you have your Big Six that are already getting, you know, the big games, and then I think there's maybe 5 to 8 more bowl games that I would keep around, and that would be about it, honestly. But
yeah, I'd say that. Like, yeah. Probably, what, Citrus? I don't know. What's the Outback Bowl called now? I don't even know what it's called. Is that the ReliQuest Bowl?
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, the one in the Citrus Bowl, the one in Tampa. I'd say the Sun Bowl, just because of its history.
I'd say Holiday, because it's got the history.
Mm-hmm. And you know, there's some of those in the South, like, you know, either the Independence Bowl or the Liberty Bowl, that, again, have the history. But, you know, things like, you know, the Fenway Bowl just need to, I mean,
right.
Can go away, you know?
The Pinstripe Bowl. Uh-huh. There's some of those, though, like, I think, like, the Arizona Bowl has ties all the way back to, like, the Copper Bowl.
That could be.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things. And the whole idea of most of the bowl games is you'd go to a city where it's warm. That was kind of
exactly.
The whole point of it. And, yeah, it just seems like that's sort of gotten lost in the whole mix of things. So, oh, well.
Yeah, sorry. I don't know how well attended the Potato Bowl is. So.
Yeah, well, I will say the Humanitarian Bowl, which was what that used to be, that actually has been around for a long time. But
I
think that one goes back to maybe the 70s or the early 80s, I would guess. During the break, I'll double check and see the bowl games and how far some of them go back. But that one, I think, has a pretty big history.
You don't want to go back to the Emerald Bowl, which I think was played at the Giants Stadium, as in San Francisco Giants?
I vaguely remember that, yeah. I remember we went through a lot of .com bowls in the late 90s and early 2000s.
Yeah, that's when you know you're in a prestigious bowl right there, when you're in a .com bowl. So.
Absolutely. All right, man, appreciate the call.
Yep, take care.
Later. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. More of the Roundup after this.
No Roblox today. However, on Thursday, there is a Roblox at 6:20 a.m. on Highway 70, 575-678-1178 for the latest info. Tonight's forecast is calling for mostly clear skies. In Alamogordo, expect a low of 41. Cloudcroft, a low of 34. For tomorrow, Thursday, looking at sunny skies, mostly clear tomorrow night. In Alamogordo tomorrow, high of 68, low of 41. For Cloudcroft tomorrow, high 55 and a low of 34.
It's the KRSY Football Roundtable, year 38, with football picks and lots of fun, right here on Alamo Sports and Talk, 1230 AM, 101.9 FM. 5 local business people making their best picks among high school, college, and pro football every Friday at 11 a.m. The KRSY Football Roundtable is brought to you by RE/MAX of Alamogordo, Casa Auto Group, JBL Construction, USA Insurance, and Gateway Mortgage. The KRSY Football Roundtable, Fridays at 11 a.m. only on Alamo Sports and Talk.
Hi, this is Cambry Seiling, Executive Director of Kids Inc. Child Advocacy Center. Kids Inc. serves child victims in Otero and Lincoln counties by providing services in a way that improves the investigation of child abuse, minimizes trauma to children, and helps families find the support services they need, all in a comprehensive, child-focused approach in a safe, neutral environment. For a tour of Kids Inc., to meet Sunny, our courthouse facility dog, or for more information, please contact us at 575-214-2558.
They go by many names. Side-by-sides, off-highway vehicles, utility task vehicles, and buggies are just a few that come to mind. But whatever you call them, make sure you're riding legally. The Lincoln National Forest has no trails that allow UTVs above 50 inches wide. What we do have is plenty of dirt roads that wind near beautiful streams, through mountains, that allow all types of UTVs on them. In other words, some of our trails accommodate four-wheelers and dirt bikes, but not side-by-sides. However, our Forest Service roads are fair game. The trails in the Lincoln National Forest were built long before modern UTVs became popular, or were even invented in some cases. The trails just weren't built to withstand use by large, heavy vehicles. Don't ruin the ride by getting a ticket. Stay on the road and off trails, Don't drive through streams or rivers, and be safe. Help keep our trails open and damage-free. If you're not sure which roads you can drive on, download our motor vehicle use map on our website. Please ride responsibly. From all of us at the Lincoln National Forest, thank you for recreating responsibly.
Some people won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
I was driving home from work.
I was heading out to meet my friends.
I was thinking about what I would make for dinner.
I was just changing the station on my radio.
I was checking my cell phone.
I was only trying to change lanes.
I never saw him.
I never saw that motorcycle.
Until it was too late.
Unfortunately, sometimes drivers don't notice motorcycles on the road until it's too late. Be aware. Always look for motorcycles, because it's their road too.
Sponsored by NMDOT and aired in cooperation with the NMBA and this station.
You're listening to Alamo Sports and Talk, 1230, 1019. Welcome back into the show. We got girls basketball tonight out in Tularosa. Mescalero and Thule facing off, 5 o'clock for JV and 6:30 for varsity tonight. So check that out. And let me double check. It is just a JV varsity setup tonight, I believe. Indeed. So, yeah, 5 and 6:30 start time happening out in Tularosa this evening. And as I'd mentioned, Alyssa Bautista, she is signing her letter of intent to play at Luna Community College from Alamogordo softball. So she's got her signing going on today. Things to watch in the sports world, speaking of bowl games. God, I think two or three bowl games tonight. Two. The Staff DNA Cure Bowl with Old Dominion in South Florida. That should actually be a pretty good game. And Louisville and Delaware in the 68 Ventures Bowl tonight. So, exciting. The NBA's just got a couple of games tonight. Cavs, Bulls, Grizzlies, Timberwolves. Grizz and T-Wolves are on NBA TV tonight. NHL is on TNT, Mammoth Red Wings, and Devils and Golden Knights coming up tonight. And college hoops, not many great games. I guess Alabama, South Florida might be somewhat decent. The spread's not too crazy on that. Number 13, Vandy at Memphis, that's decent. That's on ESPN2 this evening, so you can check that out. Maybe women's college hoops got some better games tonight. No, I would. Man, the spreads in some of these games are unbelievable. Number 2, Texas is a 60.5-point favorite against Northwestern State. Mark told me, what is it, UCLA and Cal Poly? It was like 115-38 or something last night. Yeah, Ole Miss is a 65.5-point favorite against Mississippi Valley State. Like, why are you even playing that? It does nothing for you as a top 25 college basketball program. Nothing. I guess you wanted your Knights at artists, but just play somebody a little bit. Hey, going back to the bowl games real quickly. So, you obviously keep the 6 that are in the championship. You got your Peach and Fiesta, Cotton, Rose, Orange, Sugar. Sun Bowl goes back to 1934. We keep that. Gator Bowl goes back to 1945 in Jacksonville. Citrus Bowl in Orlando going back 46. Liberty Bowl in Memphis goes all the way back to 1959. I'll stick with the Independence Bowl. It goes to 76. Even though Shreveport's not exactly a destination place. So I could see that. I could have that go away. Holiday Bowl is a good one to keep around in San Diego. ReliaQuest Bowl in Tampa. After that, I'm kind of hit or miss on any of those rest of those bowl games, you know? Sorry, New Mexico Bowl. I think we could really pare it down and make going to one of those bowl games something special again. So, I don't know. Hey, tomorrow on the show, we'll have Alamogordo Powerlifting. So, tune in for that Thursday. Have a good one, everybody.
You're listening to Alamo Sports and Talk, KRSY 1230 AM and K270 CS 101.9 FM, Alamogordo.
But he wants to do this at Alabama. Why is that a problem for so many?